From the Marquee Media Studio inside Mark Tank, it's the Mark Haney Show.
Fired up today to be with Desarte Yarnway. He's the founder of Yarnway Wealth Management. He is much, much more than that. He and I have got to know each other over the last year or so, and I realized that he's got this incredible commitment to Sacramento. He's a family man. He's into health and fitness. In fact, he played football for Cal, which is obviously extremely impressive. But he also knows how to help people win. So we're going to talk about all that, how to get an outsized return in building a business and in life. So welcome to the show, Desarte.
Mark, thank you so much for having me. I feel like every time we jump on a podcast, we have such good conversations, right? Your energy is awesome, and I know that this is going to be an awesome show.
All right, thank you. Okay, well, let's maybe just get a little bit of your background just to get to know you. Where did you come from, and how did you end up with this, life in Sacramento and helping Sacramento entrepreneurs?
Yeah, so I started my finance business when I was 24 years old, right? And I've gone through sort of every type of firm that you can go through. So I started my career at an RIA, Fisher Investments, out in the Bay Area. It's my first place after playing football that I kind of learned the basics of the business, right? That was a great experience. I kind of learned the fundamental analysis, the technical analysis of all of these things. But I thought that I wanted to be client facing, right? I'm a people person. I love to be in front of people. And I thought that that's where I can make the most impact. Went to another firm, got licensed, right? I grew that firm from a $3 million branch all the way to a $30 million branch in 6 months. So the growth was just astronomical in that short time frame. I got poached to work at a bank, so I was bouncing around from Tyson's Corner, Virginia, if anybody's watching and are familiar with the DMV area. And I would commute to New York, so Fifth Avenue, where I would manage another branch. I was the youngest and biggest producer in the Mid-Atlantic region at the time, but I thought that this wasn't like the type of business I wanted to run. I wanted to run a business that was human-centered, right, that allowed me to really impact the lives of my clients and put their needs first. So I thought that I had to create it on my own, right? So I went out, started my first firm by the name of Burknell Financial Group with a partner. And that partner, like shortly after, was like, hey, this is hard work. I don't think I'm cut out for this. And I ran that business from 2015 to maybe about 2021, 2022. And in light of having my daughter, I made another business, Yarnway Wealth, because I felt like it was important for her to see her last name on the door. And we've been running Yarnway Wealth for the past year, and it's been amazing, astronomical growth, primarily with California entrepreneurs, a lot of them being here in Sacramento. So it's been amazing, man.
All right. So I'll lay out the outline for our guests as to how I'm sort of viewing this. Today's show is going to be about winning, and it's about, I think of this as getting an outsized return on life. And part of that is financial. Part of that is building a business. You've obviously built businesses, and you're building a business, and you're helping people build businesses.
Right.
You have your family. You mentioned them, and I have met them, and it's obvious that you have you're getting an outsized return on your family compared to a lot of people that we see. And these are things that are really important to me, and also health and fitness. Right, as an athlete. You know how important that is to healthy, happiness in life. So we're going to break it up into four categories. Well, let's talk about first building financial wealth.
Yeah.
And in this economy, maybe just give me where do you see the economy today in terms of, and from an investor standpoint, what's a guy supposed to think? You get on YouTube and you're hearing that, we're going to have runaway inflation and go buy gold. Somebody else, they're all peddling the stocks and bonds. I like to do real estate and startups. Right. What do you think, man? Give me what's your take on the economy right now?
That's a great question. And I think that with the economy, this interest rate environment is actually closer to normal. Right. We're in a place where there was historically low interest rates, and we've just been spoiled with how cheap everything has been. Right. So when you think about the tightening of the economy, this is sort of how it's supposed to be. Mm-hmm. And the government is trying to get it closer to what it has been historically. Right. For somebody that's looking to make decisions in the near term, I think that borrowing is very expensive. I wouldn't do that unless it was a need. Right. Mm-hmm. Or if you have some really sound strategy. But I do think that it's important to be diversified at this time. Right. Good blend of capital market investments. If you have real estate, continue to hold your real estate, right? And make sure that everything that you do is a part of a greater plan that can be sustained over time, right? So that's just a very general kind of outlook of the market. I think that a lot of sort of the damage that could be done is probably a year, 2 years away, right? And I think that we live in a different time as it become as it pertains to like trading now, right? Mm-hmm. So it's going to be kind of a lagging effect here, but I do think if you're smart, you're waiting, right? You're patient, right? And you'll get you'll earn the fruits of your labor because of doing so.
All right. So there's three things within what you said that I want to dive into. The first one that is on the top of my mind is you said if you've got some real estate, probably hold on to that. And a lot of people have residential real estate right now, and they've got a 3-4% interest rate, or maybe even lower. And so hang on to that stuff. Make it if you need to go get a new house, hang on to that generally because that low interest rate's got some value.
Yeah, I find that people don't have a problem hanging on to real estate, right? Unlike when you invest in the stock market, right? We live in an economy right now and a society where every stock ticker is on the bottom of your screen. You're seeing the performance, either good or bad, on that screen. And it's triggering human emotion that can sometimes get in the way of the wealth building process. So if you're listening, you could be one of those people that are, checking their account statements every day. You got it on your app. Like, stop doing that thing, right? But with real estate, you don't get those prices as frequently as you would with capital markets investing, right? So I think that it's a lot easier for folks to just say, hey, I have this house. Last year, particularly when interest rates were going up, home prices were going down in some areas, especially for people that were making $100,000 a year in their home, right? But they weren't front and center like capital markets, investments, stocks, bonds, ETFs are on a day-to-day basis. So I don't think that there's going to be a problem with that. Now, my thing is that planning for the future, things cost more, right? So for example, my wife and I, we're in the market of buying another car. We're expanding our family. Let's say we buy it in cash, but if we weren't buying it in cash, right, we would have to borrow for that and interest rates are higher, meaning that it's going to add a line item to our budget, which is going to just be another thing, right? So as I think about folks that are trying to make big acquisitions of commercial real estate or multi-units or single family homes, got to really start peeling back the layers of your own financial circumstance, right? Either cleaning it up or just being certain that this is a part of a greater plan for you, for your lifestyle, for your well-being. And I think that's super important right now.
Well, I'm going to circle back to the borrowing topic because that was my second question. And you said, don't borrow unless you need to, unless it's for a good reason. And I'm 100% in agreement with that. So many people out there borrowing, getting super leveraged up on stuff like cars and boats and things that really don't go up in value. Mm-hmm. But if you borrow some money borrow some money against some real estate, okay, I can see it, especially if it's your principal residence, or if you've got a 3-4% loan and you've got rentals at this low interest rate, okay, that probably makes some sense. Or what about businesses? Because to me, I built my last group of companies, we went out and borrowed money, invested it into our business, and it grew like crazy because we invested into growing the business. Mm-hmm. Not in buying boats and cars and things like that, but right. in building a business. What's your, when you're talking to entrepreneurs out there, any thoughts about how they might think about using leverage to grow a business?
Yeah, I think that the first things first, when it comes to business owners, and if you're watching, this could be applied throughout all the topics that we'll talk about today, right? And the big thing is like, what's your big idea? That's the thing that I ask business owners before they do anything. Like, what do you want to know? So today I was actually talking to some clients down in Miami, and we're having a conversation, and they have opportunities to take their business to Dubai and Trinidad and Tobago and all these different places. And I'm like, well, that doesn't align with whatever you said your goal was, right? So as it pertains to businesses, your borrowing strategy, your raise strategy has to align with whatever the end goal is, right? And I like to say, think big, but operate small. And I find that people are quick to borrow, but slow to develop a concrete plan to apply whatever funds that they're trying to bring in, right? Mm-hmm. So there's a number of funding strategies that you can have for your business, borrowing being one of them, if you're comfortable with the current interest rates of today. But before you even get to the point of saying, hey, I want to take out a loan for my business and reinvest those assets or those funds into growing my business, why? What's the big goal here and how does that align?
Yeah. And I think also the thing I would add to that is if you're going to go borrow money, it makes sense not only to have a plan, but some proof of concept. You have to, you know, if you're leveraging your house or, you know, putting, you know, personal guarantee on it with your, if you're a small business person, you're putting a personal guarantee on a business loan, you should have some proof of concept that you can grow it. So you put the borrow the money, put it into growth with a level of confidence that it's going to work. Not, you know, starting things on borrowed money can be pretty risky. So it definitely, I'm not saying don't do it. I'm just like, think about the risk reward side of that.
Yeah, let's talk about that for a minute, right?
Yeah.
Because I find that business owners are visionaries, right? And sometimes they're willing to borrow money on a vision, right? I say, throw that out the window, right? A vision is important, but get social proof and verification from trying to go out and scale your business, right? When you have that, it makes it easier to take this quote unquote risk because you've already verified or validated this concept in the market, right? So oftentimes, you know, I'll meet with an entrepreneur and they're like, hey, I want to raise a pre-seed round. And it's like, okay, well, why? Because I need this money to produce this widget. And if I do that and sell this many, have you sold one? Have you sold 100? Have you sold
1,000? Has anybody said they'd buy one?
You understand what I'm saying? Yeah. So it just creates this, it creates more risk by going out and trying to grab money first when you haven't done the process of product market fit, right? Verifying it in the open market and getting that feedback to make an even stronger product, which would decrease the risk in the first place. So, you know, before you get into borrowing, interest rates, for any business owner listening, what's the big idea? You know, what are you trying to accomplish here? Have you tried to test it? And if you have, and if you've gotten good feedback and iterated, I think that might be a good opportunity to even raise money or, you know, go out and borrow money if need be.
Yeah. All right. So I'm going to circle back to something else that you mentioned, which is, you know, things are moving along okay, or maybe even feeling somewhat normalized at the moment, even though we do have a little bit of, we have some inflation, interest rates are normalized. It's not the worst environment, but you said, you know, nothing lasts forever, as we know. There's these cycles, and nobody can predict exactly when the end of this cycle will happen. Yeah. They've been saying we're going into recession for the last year and a half, but it hasn't happened yet. But it's pretty light. It's going to happen at some point. So forecasting, what are you thinking on that?
When you think about just markets in general, right, and you look at Franklin Templeton's kind of graph that he has that has stood the test of time, markets have peaks. They have contractions. That's a bear market that, you know, can happen. They have a trough, right, which is the bottom of the market. And then they have an expansion period when you start to get some confidence again, right? And then it goes back into that peak, right? So you look at these, and these are like the 4 to 5 stages of a market cycle. As we see it today, technically, we're in an expansion, right? Because we've gone through this place where markets were contracting. Last year, interest rates went up, markets went down, right? And we got to the bottom of the market where everybody was probably looking at their home prices, looking at their account statements, like what is going on. If you are a financial advisor not communicating with your clients, they're probably ringing your phone, right? And they're like, hey, what's going on, right? Fortunately, I don't have that problem with my clients. But it was a contraction, right? We've gone through that phase. This year, we're up 15, 17%. If you're in aggressive portfolios, you're probably up in the 20%, right? If you're buying some individual equities, right, like our firm has, you can very well be in the 30s, 40%, right, in terms of performance this year. So we're technically in a expansion. Things are going well. For whatever reason, the market is pricing out the data that's saying, hey, interest rates are going to continue to happen. And it's just pricing that into the expectation. So when it comes to a forecast, I don't have a crystal ball. I'm not a genie. If I was, I would probably be on a beach somewhere, right? But I think that, you know, markets are cyclical. And your best bet is to prepare for cycles as we know they're coming. And one of the best ways to do that is through diversification.
What in terms of like, okay, so I lived through 2008 and, you know, I still have PTSD from 2008 because we had to let a lot of people go and restructure the, you know, the income statement or the expenses. And that was painful. And so I have this, you know, thinking that we're, you know, that there's a landing coming and I don't know if it's going to be soft or hard. But if it's hard, maybe it's a little bit like 2008. So I'm thinking about the things that might, that are concerning that are out there in terms of economic uncertainty is, you know, the debt limit. you know, we just got our, you know, the ratings agencies are lowering our rating in America. So part of that, I'm sure, is because of our, you know, debt and just the interest that, is, that we have to pay on the debt. There's a geopolitical unrest that you pretty tough to predict if China's going to, you know, invade Taiwan or something else that's going to happen like that. But like in terms of what is most likely out there, what are you seeing in terms of, you know, gives you the most concern where you want to maybe sort of hedge your bet against, you know, betting big on, you know, say, let's call it the stock market?
Yeah, the biggest thing for me, I mean, I just want people to understand this, right? So when you look at stock market growth over the last 200 years and you zoom out, what you see is something starting at zero, right? And then over the course of that time period, a graph with squiggly lines going up into the right, right? It's going up, it's performed, it's grown over the time that the stock market has ever been a thing, okay? But what you don't see and what's not accounted for in that graph is all of these micro events that's happening in between. I remember when I first started my career, I was at a firm, I was an investment associate, I was a trader, right? And one of the big things that were going on was the Ebola crisis in West Africa, right? Everybody thought it was the end of the world. They thought Ebola was going to be what COVID was, right? Mm-hmm. And shut everything down at that time. So markets took a dip, right? And people were scared and slowly we got over that, right? And then we were off to the next problem. We went to war in Iraq. There were some things that happened in between, World War II. Like all of this stuff, you date back and you keep going back. Mm-hmm. We've had these events. So instead of pointing out what single event might be the one that takes this thing to the bottom, it's usually the things that you can't see, right? Like in 2008, it was the things that we couldn't see, those subprime mortgages that really tanked it and how they affected the market because people couldn't afford their real estate, right? And I think if it's anything, it's going to be the things that we can't see. But what I can plan for, right, that is concerning, is just the interest rates and the inverted yield curve that, you know, we talk about a lot in finance. I think that could be an issue. I think it seems like the Fed is trying to see how far they can go, right? Because to date, it's been very soft. It's been a pretty soft landing, right? So I think interest rates is something that people can or should keep a close eye on. And I think by doing that, you're able to position yourself. And it's not always bad, Mark. I do believe that it's a good environment for savers, right? Because at banks, you probably get an email from your bank and it says, we just raised our savings rate again.
5% now.
You get 5%. You look at treasuries, you look at short terms, right? These things are paying a lot more interest. So if you're able to strategize this in a way that benefits you, there you could be a winner, as you would say. You can be a winner in this market environment.
Well, then that's really what it's about. I mean, in life, we want to have enough information and make decisions appropriately so we can have a better than average return on our life and better than average return on our investment dollar. And because this, I mean, that's how we get ahead. So some of those philosophies, I think, work in building a business. They obviously work in all parts of life. So in terms of kind of switch more on the business, we talk specifically about borrowing in business. But like, what are the other kind of things that you do or you see in helping people to get this outsized gain when they're building their business? What are their advice?
You know what? There's a quote that I love, and it says, if you are such person, why worry about such thing? Right? And essentially, the way that I interpret that quote is like, you know, business owners come to me and they have a lot of concerns, right? I don't know how is this going to scale, or what do you think about this? I need to get all these things in order. But it's like, business owners need to focus on making themselves the strongest that they can be from a mental, physical, financial standpoint, because if they have created themselves to be this type of person, failure is slim for their business. I feel like you reduce the failure rate in your business by making yourself the type of person that gets up early and gets that workout in, that has their mind right, right? Can meticulously go through the financial statements or just understand the inner workings of their business, maybe contract help for people to help them with that. But the first thing you have to do is make yourself the type of person that can succeed in any market environment and in any business, right? Mm-hmm. And that takes a great deal of grit, excellence, right? And kindness, actually, to have employees that want to be along with you on that journey. So if you are such a person, why worry about such thing? And I think that's the part that business owners sleep on, right? Because they think that so much of business growth has to do with the product or the shiny object that you're going to sell, right? Whereas a lot of business growth, obtaining funding, especially if you do it in a, you know, a venture capacity, right? starts with you, mm-hmm. right? So if I'm looking at you across the table and you're saying, hey, we have this great idea. We think it's going to revolutionize the world. We have an exit plan. It's going to sell, right? And we're going to return our capital to shareholders times 10. But I don't believe you as a person to be capable of doing that. I'm not going to invest my time, energy, and resources into that business. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So you have to really focus on making yourself the type of person that can go out and succeed.
So thinking about that, there's sort of a self-awareness process to deciding where you need to strengthen up. Because some of the people that we meet in entrepreneurship are very, very introverted. They, as you mentioned, they're product people a lot of times, and they're not as good at moving people into action yet. They just haven't developed that skill. They've more analytical in nature. So in terms of recognizing what you bring, mm-hmm. what you might want to change in yourself, or maybe what you might need to add to your team. I mean, talk to me about like that self-awareness. You've obviously built a successful company. I'm sure you did not do it alone. Yeah. Did you, in terms of how important was self-awareness, do you think?
Yeah, so just to take you down that journey, I started my company with a founder. That founder left, right? The first one. And I scaled my business to a very profitable, lean business in like 5 years. Rebranding and re-registering my firm, right? I've been able to achieve almost all of that success in the first like 8 months that I did in 5 years, right? So in terms of self-assessment, knowing thyself is the gateway to making yourself that type of person, right? Like, what are your strengths? What are your weaknesses? I don't even like the word weaknesses, to be honest. What are development opportunities for you to just get stronger, right? And I think for me, assessing those development opportunities has allowed me to go get either the tech or the human capital that could help me be way more efficient, yeah. right? But I think the focus on business owners is always about like, the sale, the funding, and they forget that they're the gateway to get those things.
You know what I've done in my self-awareness, because I probably spend too much time thinking about myself, getting really self-aware. Yeah. But what I've realized with me specifically, and I don't know that I'm a typical entrepreneur, but I get more caught up in the dream and the sales piece of things and yeah. the organizational skills and a lot of the other things that are very essential in terms of executing a business plan, maybe not so good at. And I feel like I've been aware of that since my first business. And so Right. Got in the habit of putting people on my team that were a heck of a lot better than me. Mm-hmm. And that to me has been essential. And I know for scaling a business, you're not going to be able to scale it alone. You need to be able to have the right teammates so that you can have strengths in all areas, because nobody's great at everything.
Yeah. So I find that, you know, that's absolutely correct. And I find that there's a couple business owner personalities, right? There's a business owner that is self-aware, and before they get to how, they're looking for who. So they're like, okay, I know that I want to do this thing. Who can help me do it, mm-hmm. right? So they go out and they try to find who first, right? And then there's the other business owner on the other hand. It's like, I'm capable of doing this. How do I get it done, right? So they skip the who and go straight to how. Both of those things are okay, right? But it takes you to be very, you know, very self-aware to be able to figure out which one are you,
right?
Right? I find that.
I never really thought of it like that. I think I'm a who person.
Yeah.
I so think generally, that's where I fit into that.
Exactly. You might very well just be a who person. So you have an idea, you're like, okay, who, right? I'm a how person. So yeah. I'm like, okay, I need to fix.
Because you're good at stuff. So you have that, you're like, you're ambidextrous, right? I can't throw that handed.
I'm like, okay, so how do I get this done, right? Then yeah. I get on my laptop and I'm Googling and I'm trying to put the pieces together. And I'm like, okay, I may be stuck here. I don't have enough time, talent, or resource to get this done. Who can I find that can help me do this piece? Right. Yeah. Because I can't write a line of code in my life. Right. So those things are important. I find those two personalities often as I work with entrepreneurs. I'm like, hey, man, you need to get a power team and you need to be very critical about who you're actually letting into.
I agree. This is really interesting because as an investor, sorry to interrupt you, as an investor, typically we're investing into people that can get it done. Right. They know their business. They've a lot of times worked in that arena, and they've got this track record of, you know, kicking butt in that field. Occasionally, we're running into someone more like me that has maybe industry experience. But if that person I mean, they better have a darn good team around them, or, you know, we shy away pretty quick from the guy that only talks a good game, and he still needs to get those other execution people around him or her.
Yeah.
And it's just important to know that about yourself.
Yeah. And I think, you know, even that guy can have a great idea and vision, but it has to be supported, right? It has to be supported with the people, the social proof, the verification, like, hey, I've gotten this team. We've been able to do this, right? So I think both can exist in the marketplace, right? It's just a matter of how they grow and build on top of those personalities, right? So for me, I try to get a lot of this stuff done, get it verified, right? Hopefully get some revenue from it, right? And then I can find the people that can take me to the next level. In fact, that's where our firm is right now, hiring aggressively so I can get the person or the people that can take us to the next level. So it's been great.
That's great. All right, I'm going to jump over to something you touched on in terms of routines. So getting yourself right. I love that. Get yourself right, and then maybe you can help other people to get what they want out of life if you can get yourself fixed first. So fix yourself, and then you'll be able to fix your family and then fix your business and then change the world. There's so many people that are caught up in everybody else's stuff, and they're pretty darn broken, and you know, we've got to get ourselves healthy. So in terms of that, you know, part of that is physically, part of that is emotionally. Give me your perspective on how you do it, and maybe just thinking through how others that might be listening might want, you know, any hacks, anything you might, you know, lend to others.
So first, I want to say that you cannot pour from an empty cup, right? So, you know, if I could like imagine everybody has like a gallon of water that they have, right? A lot of times we go out and we water other people before watering ourselves, right? So when you think about just your physical health, your business health, you know, and the health of pretty much everything that's in your ecosystem, so mental, physical, emotional, financial, typically people are using this 1 gallon for each of these things and going elsewhere instead of watering themselves first, right? So from a financial standpoint, they're prioritizing everything that does not have to do with them, right? From a physical standpoint, they are trying to do everything that is detrimental to their physical health, right? Or not even thinking about it enough. So the way that I like to frame it is that folks need to take this gallon of water and start with self, right? So in your routine, what are the 3 things that are non-negotiable for you to feel like your best self? For me, that's waking up early, right? 4:35 at least, right? Getting on my Peloton, riding for 30 minutes, then getting the lift in, drinking an entire, almost a gallon of water before I leave the house, right? I'm doing that, eating a nice, small, healthy breakfast or using my juicer right before I get into the workday and everything else that I have to do.
So all this, I get up at 3:15, 3:30, which is everybody.
You just had to one-up me, huh?
Yeah. Well, no, I think maybe it's stupid that I do that. Like, I'm not bragging about that. I'm more like, you know, my habit, but that means you got to go to bed early too. So it's kind of an interesting thing is the sacrifices that you need to make in order to be, you know, if you roll out of bed, you didn't get enough sleep and you're going through that routine.
Yeah.
That's one thing. But if you roll out of bed invigorated to get on the Peloton and the juicing, you're happy about what you're pouring into your body. Mm-hmm. That's a lot better than, you know, you burn the candle at both ends. Right. So for me, a lot of times when we get ourselves into these set routines, it means sacrifices somewhere else, right? And so maybe before I go the rest of your day, what are you sacrificing in order to get up at, you know, I get up really early, you get up pretty damn early too. So what are you sacrificing?
Yeah, so this is the issue. This is why I decided to get up early, because I felt selfish of doing this later in the day. So I was taking time away from being with my wife or playing with my daughter. If I got it in the middle of the day, hop on a Peloton, like, hey, I got to get my workout in for an hour, hour and a half, right? So instead of sacrificing the time with them, I'm forcing myself to wake up early so that I can have time with them, right? So I've been taking this selfless approach versus being selfish. So I think that, you know, and to people's, you know, just to touch and agree with some folks, it's hard to do everything. Adulting's hard. There's 24 hours a day, right? You are trying to take your kids to school, be excellent at your job, not, you know, gain weight and do all this stuff. That's a hard thing to do. So I just want to say, be nice to yourself, be kind to yourself. But being more selfless was, that was my way to get That's up early and kind of do my thing.
My reason for getting up early, we used to, my old businesses, we, you know, we started pretty early in the morning and I wanted to get there on time and try to set an example. And because we did business on the East Coast, we, a lot of people got there at 5 or 6 o'clock in the morning. Mm-hmm. I typically would get there at 6 in the later years. Anyway, what happened to me was I made excuses. So when do you work out? So, and you know, get meditation type stuff done, get your mind right. Mm-hmm. And invariably at the end of the day, I was tired or there was something fun to do with the family or, you know, I coached football and baseball and there was always something going later in the evening. It's like the only time I can definitely do the carve out is when everybody else is in bed. Right. So, you know, no one's going to be bugging me at, you know, 3:15, 4 in the morning. I'll do it tired until you get in the habit of it. And the next thing you know, you're finding a way to get your sleep patterns right. But I did it because maybe it's FOMO. I didn't want to miss out on the cool stuff that was happening, you know, at 6 o'clock at night that, or, you know, 10 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
So I had to,
you know,
so, I didn't have such a great reason like you.
Yeah. I was just trying to be selfless, but I do think that as a business owner, you kind of have to have your schedule dialed in, right? And I think that's the thing that can almost limit people from growing because they're doing a lot of ad hoc things, right? That's one thing that could be an asset or a liability if you're not dialed in with your schedule. So part of being your best self and, you know, winning is ensuring that you're organized, mm-hmm. right? Because there should be a set time for you to work out. There should be a set time for you to do work for your business. There should be a set time for you to like plan, you know, or play with your family. And you look at it across industries. So one of the things I like to do, Mark, is like to look at other industries for inspiration. Some of the industries that I like or, you know, things that I like is like art, food, right? Very good food. Looking at sports teams, obviously I played football at the University of California, Berkeley, and we manage a handful of professional athletes today through our firm. And I see in all of these things, especially the athletes, right? Like Tom Brady wakes up and eats almost the same breakfast every day. Drew Brees eats the same breakfast every day, right? And they have these things so dialed in because they understand what the return on investment is, right? So if I'm doing this and my schedule is this way, I know that I can expect excellence on the other side. And as a entrepreneur, you almost have to figure out what that formula is for you so you can expect excellence on the other side. Because if you are not excellent, you cannot demand excellence from anyone else. And I think that's something that, for me, I had to make sure that I was doing, right? I had to make sure that I exuded excellence when I walked into the room, mm-hmm. Right? Not only for my business and the people that work with me, but also, you know, for my wife and kid. I want my kid to see me as my dad's a superhero, right? He's excellent. I make mistakes, right? But she knows that I'm trying to get up, be healthy so I can be around her for a long time,
yeah.
et cetera, right? So, you know, business owners that are listening, make sure that you are setting yourself up for excellence.
I think one of the things that's happened to me, but I've seen it in other people, two is, you know, when you start getting a little bit out of shape or whatever, you know, you've got off of your routines, the good ones, and it weighs on you in a way, right? It's sort of like maybe mm-hmm. there's this guilt feeling or you aren't at your very best. You're not able to, you know, bring it as well to your family and the rest of your business if there's this, you're not feeling as good about yourself. Yeah. So, you know, for me, it's like, it's a helpful for me, and maybe this is part of yours too, is if I'm feeling like I'm in shape or, you know, living, you know, the right lifestyle from a personal standpoint, then I've got more confidence and more, you know, less weight on me.
Yeah.
So to get my workout in or whatever that might be.
Yeah. So we talk about a couple things at our business, right? For people that are starting their business, we just talk about starting your business with confidence and the sort of the things that you'll need, right? You need financial plans for you as a founder, financial plan for the business, bookkeeper, tax person, right? Lawyers, if you will. Allows you to go out into the playing field and feel confident, right? Just like when I played at Cal, we knew literally when the commercial would come on, when the coin was going to be flipped, right? What to expect as we studied our game plan for our opponent so we could go on to the playing field with confidence. And I think, again, business owners need to do that for themselves because when you're thinking about the burdens of not feeling like your best self, right, not having the time to spend with your family and all of the natural things that come with business ownership, it becomes hard to operate, right? So it's your job to sculpt yourself, if you will, right, into the person that doesn't have that extra weight, doesn't have those burdens, so you can really be optimal at your job and at this vision that you want to scale. And I think that's very, you know, that might be a hot take, but people might tell you, hey, you have to find product market fit, you have to have a good pitch deck, you have to have all that stuff. I would argue that you can't even really give your best into those things if you first aren't preparing yourself as the leader and visionary of your company.
Interesting. Yeah, I like the sculpt mentality, because that means you're saying, I took that as you're saying no to some things. So some of the sacrifices that they don't really feel like sacrifices many times, but hey, I'm not going to stay to the end of the Kings game, right? Because I got to get back or whatever it might be. I mean, if it's a playoff game, I'm for sure. If they're blowing somebody out, I might turn it off, a little bit early and not, you know, to make sure that I'm getting to bed on time. And you can't say yes to everybody. You can say yes if, but not yes every time.
Yeah, let's go to the idea of the big idea, right?
Okay, yeah.
So, for example, I'm talking to my clients, this morning, actually, in our meeting. He's in Miami. I'm here. And professional football player, by the way. I think he's going to retire this year. So we're talking. And he's like, I want to do this, and I'm getting all these opportunities. Of course, you're you know? And I think I want to do it, but I don't know if I should do it because my goal is to do this, right? He has this big idea. He knows exactly what he wants to achieve. If it doesn't align with your big idea compass, if you will, don't say yes. Say no, right? And I think we are in a place, right, where business owners think that saying yes leads to more opportunities and results, when in fact, being completely focused on your big idea is the only thing that moves the needle forward, right? And you even see this with like product build outs, where a business owner might say, we're building this thing, but somebody asked us for some AI technology, so we're going to veer off a little bit and get back on track. Say no. Like, you know what I mean? Say no to it, stay focused, and move that needle further in product development, in revenue especially, right? And in market share, and you are winning the game.
Interesting. So I am 100% in agreement with that. And I have my big ideas in different sections of my life. But thinking about somebody that might be exiting the NFL, maybe we don't have to bring up this person specifically because, I don't want to hurt privacy issues and stuff. But a lot of people don't have the big idea.
They don't.
Yeah, it's like, oh, yeah. Big idea. I have no idea what I'm going to do, so I'm just going to like chase some shiny objects because I don't have the big idea yet.
Yeah, but then you're running in place.
Yeah.
You're running in circles, right? And my desire is not to run around the track in life, right? I want to go somewhere. I want to be in destination to somewhere, right? And I think that you find that, you know, business owners sometimes have this realization after a couple years, like, what am I actually doing, you know, when they don't have that mission and vision in line? Like, where am I going, right? I don't know if you, watch, you know, one of my favorite movies, Forrest Gump.
Yeah, like, seen it a number of times.
Just running.
Yeah.
You know, they're just running, but where are you going? Yeah. And I think that's something that at the onset of your journey and even revisiting while you're on this marathon, you have to ask yourself, like, what's the big goal here? What's the big goal in the short term? Right, because if you get that you can build on top of that. So I think, as I look at business owners and them building businesses for themselves, a lot of the failure comes from not having a direction. And having a direction will hopefully, you know, increase the success potential.
Yeah. One of the things I did is I wrote a mission statement. Even though I didn't know exactly what my big dream was going to be, it was an overarching mission, personal mission statement, because we had had one for our business. I feel like that's been a good guiding light for helping me to sort of discover the big visions in my life, starting with a general mission statement, which is sort of aligns the direction I'm going. If I don't have the big vision yet, well, you can't stop and wait until you have the big vision. You have to keep moving in life. So how do you begin to start taking some steps? And the mission statement allowed me to start taking some steps. And then I sort of discovered or began to manifest what the vision would have, you know, how the vision might take place.
So what did you have in that mission statement? Let's just unpeel this back.
With future generations in mind, I will help my family. I will help create opportunity for my family, my friends, and my community. And as they succeed, I succeed. So really it was around creating opportunity for the people I care about. And Well, what's creating opportunity look like? Well, it looks, and it comes out in different ways. And for me, I've been helping entrepreneurs for the most part. My family, I'm, you know, doing things to create opportunity for my family as well. But from a business standpoint, it's around creating opportunity for other business owners.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'd argue that that is the big goal.
Yeah. Right?
So if something doesn't align with that, you probably say no.
Oh, yeah.
Exactly. So I think that people don't even have that. They don't have that. That one line, like for example, for my firm, Yarnway Wealth Management, our goal is to be the go-to financial advisory / wealth firm for business owners in California, right? So at the end of the day, our content, our, you know, where we show up, right? The partnerships and connections that we have are all in alignment with us being the go-to firm for business owners here in California, our expertise and what we learn and
so
how
we plan.
What do
you do with a client in Miami?
He has business. I'm just quiet. And he's from California. Yeah. So he's here. That's a good question, actually. Damn it. No, but seriously, that's our goal, right? Yeah. So we know that certain opportunities, as awesome as they might be, it's a no.
Yeah.
Right? Because it doesn't align with what we want. And I think a lot of the times, you know, business owners don't have that. They don't have a compass telling them what's a yes, what's a no, right? And where they should lend their, I call it your personal capital, right? With an asterisk on it. That's your time, your talent, and your resources, right? Those are things that only you have. And if you're saying yes to anything, you're going to be depleted in your time, your talent, and your resources.
Yeah, you've only got so much of those things. I mean, that's one of the reasons I went relentlessly local with our investing strategy is you've only got so much capital to spread around. Right. And in my mission statement, it said my community. I didn't say my country, although I am very patriotic. And, you know, my son was in the military. I'm always talking about patriotism on the show. But how do I not spread myself so thin? Let me focus on Sacramento community. And so we only invest into Sacramento startups. And it's just a way to sort of have a focus, if you will. So to me, that's one of my big filters is, where do you live? Where's your business at? How are we impacting my hometown?
Right. And I think, you know, that's why I say think big and operate small. My big goal, right, is to be the go-to wealth management firm for entrepreneurs in California, right? But that can start right here, mm-hmm. right? And then you build on that. No pun intended, but compound interest. It's important, right, to start somewhere, have efforts, investments, and let that grow over time. It's a phenomenon. It's a wonder of the world, right? So I think there's a level of patience and grace that, you know, one, specifically business owners have to give themselves because nothing great is built overnight. So you start thinking about just the planning that goes into this. And, you know, I do a little bit of investment myself, right? And I'm watching a company get their Series D and seeing from the onset of that company where they started, right, to almost running out of money to the point where, like, they're considering, you know, exits and liquidity events, right? So when you think about that, that takes time, that takes iteration, that takes mistakes,
yeah,
right? So you have to take that time and start small, think big, operate small. I say that to myself all the time. I think that you have to make it simple. So another thing that I tell myself in my own business building process is that less is more when less does more, right? And I find that business owners, you know, want to take on the world, and that might not be your thing. You know, your thing is to impact the world by doing this thing, this one thing really, really well, right? And that one thing can become very profitable, very impactful, right? And can change not only your life, but the life of your community, your family, your country, right? So when you think about just the perspective, I hope people get from this episode is like, you can do anything, but you shouldn't do everything, right? Mm-hmm. And if you just focus on the things that you're passionate about, you love, and are willing to spend your capital, time, energy, talent, resources on, you can be successful, right? With a plan. And I think that's what my firm is here to do. And I see you doing with the Grow Factory as well.
You can do anything, but don't try to do everything. I love that way of thinking. And because we don't want to discourage people from thinking big,
right?
But have a direction.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. So I was on a Fox TV show with you the other day.
Yeah.
And you brought your family, you brought your wife and your, was not an infant, but little kid.
Yeah.
How old is your child?
She's 15 months now.
15 months. Okay. Yep. So, yeah. So I think at that point she was sort of.
She wasn't even one.
Yeah. I was thinking about one. And it was obvious that you brought them with you and that there's a closeness with you, with your family. And so let's talk about you, the family man. And
yeah.
And maybe where your values came from in terms of like your approach to building a great family, because it's obviously that you're at the beginning stages of doing something really special with your family.
Yeah. Thank you for bringing up my wife. I might get brownie points for this when I get home.
She was amazing. You know? your child was amazing. And I saw the interaction together. And it's like they're coming down to the studio to hang out. It was just awesome.
Yeah. So I come from immigrant family. My mother and father were born in West Africa, Liberia. My mom actually was born on a rubber plantation in West Africa where they made Firestone tires. So
was somebody an employee of that?
They had like schools for the kids in the village that could go because Firestone was like taking the land.
And okay, so there's like a hospital or hospital, kind of
school,
thing
all that stuff, and then they had the rubber trees. Rubber comes from trees.
Yeah,
to like get the material and kind of make rubber. So my mom was born on a Firestone plantation in West Africa, Liberia. Everything's about village there, right? So when I hear you talk about the backyard advantage, I think about the village that literally my mom and my dad grew up in, and we frequent Liberia to this day. My wife is Liberian as well, right? So I've learned that importance of family from them. Unfortunately, I lost my father when I was 12 years old. So I swore to myself that, you know, I would create something that would allow me to never miss a moment and be really, really close to my kid and my future kid, right? So when I built, you know, my firm back in 2015, one of my big goals is like, hey, I need to create something that gives me what I call time affluence, right? So time affluence, as defined by me, is an abundance of time so I can spend it with the people, places, things that I love the most, right? So that was my big goal then. It's like, okay, create something that gives you time affluence, because if you can do that, you'll be able to create more memories with your family. So now I've created my firm, right? We're scaling. We leverage tech and human capital to continue to do a lot of the background work. But I have time to take my kid to school, right? Whereas when I was on Wall Street, there was no time.
Yeah. Right? And what's that time worth? That time is priceless.
It's priceless, right? So, you know, if you put a dollar amount to your time, I mean, one can say I'm losing money by ensuring that, you know, I'm at the moment. Like, I go to my daughter's swim class every Wednesday. You know, she's in gymnastics now. I wasn't able to go last week. But, you know, for the most part, she sees me there supporting her, and that's important to me, right? So I would say it's the humble beginnings that have gotten me to a point with my family that allows them to continually be a priority, because we have one life, right? And as great as scaling businesses is, right, I think that, you know, some things you'll never get back, right? And I think business owners have to understand that risk-reward trade-off, right, with their family and with scaling a business. Your business isn't going anywhere, right? And if you are meticulous in planning, have a direction, as we mentioned before, you can plan to succeed, right? But, you know, some of those moments you can't get back.
Well, I'm glad you've built that kind of life for yourself. I thankfully, you know, I did daddy gymnastics when my daughter was, you know, whatever. I think she started when she was about 2 years old. So,
yeah.
And I was the main one taking her, not my wife. It was like our thing together. And, you know, I think some of that early time, especially for a father, whether it be with a daughter or a son, that early time with your children, it is so important for your relationship as they grow up. And now my daughter is 37 and we're extremely close. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of that stemmed from the closeness that happened when she was just a little kid and a teenager. And, you know, it carries if you do it right at the beginning.
Yeah. I mean, early investments, that we always talk about the cost of waiting in finance, right? It's like, if you start investing $100, you know, and I don't have my like computer in front of me, right? So anybody watching, don't try to bash me in the comments or something. But if you start investing early, at 25, $200 a month, that money will be worth more than if you start with that same amount at 35, right? Considering a modest return, let's say like 5 or 6%, right? The later you start, the harder it is to build that value, a large nest egg. The earlier you start, time value of money, compound interest is going to be worth more. Yeah. I consider that the same thing for family investments, right? And making those deposits early, right? The earlier I begin to really pour on to my family, my daughter, and let her know that I am a safe space for her, right? Later, we're going to be wealthy in love, experiences, and relationship, right? So I think that's super important.
Yeah, and I would add that's same with our friends, that the more we invest into our could be a childhood friend. It could be your teammates at work. The more that we invest into them, if we plan on these are going to be our friends for the rest of our life,
right?
You know, people say your network is your net worth and things like that. And it's true that if you can go into relationships thinking these are going to be lifelong relationships, they do last. And they do. There is a compounding effect associated with people you know and the tribe that you're building. So I think that that works for sure in all relationships. Yeah. Okay, so with that said, any other thoughts on family? Obviously, you chose well when you picked your wife. I assume you didn't meet her in Liberia, did you?
We met through a mutual friend.
Okay.
Who knew me, knew her. Like,
did they know you're both from Liberia?
They knew.
Okay, yeah. They a couple knew. Of Liberian. Was the person that introduced you to Liberia?
He was, actually. So it was a full circle moment. But nothing more on family. You know, one of my managing directors on Wall Street used to say something to me. And I just started to realize like that in my adult life, my career as an entrepreneur, right, firm owner. He used to say, networking is one letter away from not working.
Mm.
And I used to be like, what do you mean? Like, they say your network is your net worth and all these things. But I recently, maybe over the course of the last 4 or 5 years, I understand what he meant. And what he meant is like building great relationships isn't necessarily about what you can get out of someone. It's about what you can give, right? Mm-hmm. So in every room that I walk in every event, you know, you ask me to speak or show up, I'm going to come and give something, leave it better off than I found it, right? So I think, you know, when you think about family, when you think about, you know, building lasting relationships, it's about leaving it better off than you found it, right? And that's why networking is one letter away from not working, because a lot of people go into raising capital. It's just all about what they can get out of this situation, not necessarily what they're giving to the situation.
Yeah, I mean, you've dropped so many nuggets in this show. You know, I agree that give more than you take, leave it better than you found it. Okay, so I'll give you last drop mic moment. Any other words of wisdom that you might want to share with our audience? Anything that I didn't cover?
I think I'm all out, Mark. I hope that was enough.
No, I don't think that's possible. So anybody who doesn't know. You are a tremendous speaker. If anybody who's been listening can tell you've got this wisdom. You've spoken to people at the Growth Factory and to entrepreneurs, but you have a way of putting things in a simple way that I think are very digestible for the rest of us. And you have a podcast, which is Sactopreneur.
Sactopreneur podcast. If you want to listen, you know, we have guests, people that are actually in the Growth Factory, come on, share their stories. And I do something called study halls about every other week where you can come and learn something about how to plan for your business exit, et cetera. Our firm, www.yarnwaywealth.com, where you can find me and, you know, our team and kind of look at the work that we're doing. And I'm around, man. I'm always at the Sac Republic games and, you know, hanging around the Growth Factory. So I'm sure those that are listening may catch me, you know, around Sacramento somewhere.
Thank you for what you do. Thanks for coming on the show today. Appreciate you helping out the Growth Factory. Nice. Always indebted. So appreciate it. Sorry.
Thanks, Mark. Appreciate it.
You bet. And to all you out there fighting the good fight for entrepreneurship and for the backyard advantage. And of course, all of you out there fighting the good fight for our freedom, our security, and our way of life. Here at Haney Biz, the Mark Haney Show, and the Growth Factory, we're never above you. We're never below you. Always by your side.
This segment includes the personal knowledge, experiences, and opinions about angel investing by seasoned angel investors. This content is for informational purposes only and should not be considered as legal, tax, investment, or financial advice. Nothing in the segment constitutes a solicitation, recommendation, or endorsement.